I'm here with Sam, the founder of Integrative Clarity Coaching. And Sam and I met on Instagram, and I'm really inspired by his own leadership teachings. So let me read his mission statement that he submitted to us. So ICC exists, Sam says, to be a resource to leaders in all levels using a five-prong system that helps them grow. The term leader, quote unquote, has gone through a decent degree of semantic satiation. And my mission is to help those with the title make it mean something tangible and sustainable to themselves, their teams, and the entire organization. Thank you, Sam. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate you being here. So with can you give us a look into what led you into Clarity Coaching?
Absolutely. So 6 years ago, I moved from New Jersey to Texas, kicking and screaming because I didn't like the cold weather, and I sought my own independence, as much independence as I could seek as a 24-year-old that still had much, much to learn in that space. So when I moved to Texas, I had already been a personal trainer for about 2.5 years. And I just remembered that my uncle, who'd been in the consulting spaces for many, many years, told me that I would be a great life coach. Now, when he told me that back in 2013, I'm like, all right, cool, whatever. Don't know exactly what that means, but all right. But for whatever reason, well, no, it's not whatever reason. I knew that I wanted to help build people up from a holistic standpoint, not just help them get big biceps and big butts in the whole personal trainer sense. So, in that space, I'm like, how do I make this not just a fitness brand, but a lifestyle empowerment brand? So, from that point on, when I moved to Texas, I started from the ground up building something that was formerly known as Animode Empire. Now, Animode Empire, it stands for Animal Mode. And since I didn't want to just say Beast Mode, I figured Animode was the next best thing. So, neither here nor there. I got my first certification as a coach in July of 2016. And let's just go ahead and call the first 2.5 years what it was. They were a bust. Okay. I'm just here getting started as a life coach, learning the do's and the don'ts, probably more of the don'ts than the do's, if I'm really honest with myself in that space. But I was audacious, I'll give myself that. Anyway, after 2 years of laundering little successes here, more defeats than I can really recall, I literally hustled my place into homelessness. And what I mean by that is I put myself in a position where I just was in a state of striving. Striving from a place of scarcity, from a place of lack. There are so many different words. It's a strain. It was me trying to prove to maybe to others, to myself, maybe a mix of both, that I was able to be a good life coach. So those 3 months, August 2018 to the end of October 2018. Very sobering months, very humbling months. In that space, I began to build from a very core foundational stance, not just from a business place, but from a meaning. Who is Sam to be? That was also the time period in which I really started to hear the voice of the Lord for the first time in many, many years. The point where he had my attention, didn't really know how to walk with him in that space, but he definitely had my attention. And I didn't know exactly what I was going to do with my business or with myself at that point, but I was like, Lord, I don't got this. You got it. Shortly after, I found an apartment in San Antonio, lived there for about 3 months. And in the midst of all of this, the homelessness piece, and a few months prior to that, I was also working for a consulting company for junior ROTC drill teams. It's called Drill Team Dynamics. And they got a call to do missions work in South Sudan, building the very first ever South Sudanese silent drill team. So my job was to go there, build the team, and our job in the United States from about, I want to say July, the time we left in March 2019, prepare for that. So there was a lot going on.
Question.
Living in my car.
You said drill team, like drill sergeant?
Yes, in a sense. If you're, are you familiar with the movie Major Payne?
I think so, yes.
Cadet Kelly? Rifle spinning?
Yeah, wow, really?
There it is.
Okay, everybody.
those are the two movies I always reference.
Oh my gosh.
Major Payne, Cadet Kelly.
Okay, continues. I just wanted to make sure I understood that I heard that correctly.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm leaving some parts of the story out. Not intentionally, but this is just to get to the meat and potatoes of everything. Mm-hmm. I have a very, very wide background in particularly military drill. Not the military itself, but military drill, mm-hmm. which is one of the things that opened the door to that South Sudanese opportunity. But going back to the whole San Antonio story, I feel like this is a little bit all over the place, but bear with me. We're going somewhere here, all right? So November to February, end of February 2019, living in San Antonio, no longer homeless, preparing for South Sudan, also rebuilding my life coaching practice, not looking for clients at this point, mm-hmm. but building everything foundationally, mm-hmm. always making sure that I have a system. What does it look like to intake clients? What does it look like to do particular exercises with clients? Do I do certain things? Do I not do certain things? Every bell and whistle that I could possibly think of, that is what I was doing, including getting probably more certifications than I needed at that point. But hey, perfectionist. Anyway, this is this whole action here. So thank you for asking these questions, for allowing me to share. March 2019 until May 2020. It's a 14-month stint with a few months of breaks in between. That was when I was in South Sudan. Whenever I wasn't working with soldiers or practicing military drill for my own self, preparing for a competition known as the World Drill Championships, I was going right back to building my personal and professional foundation. Really learning what it's like to walk with the Lord. Really learning what it's like to put myself in a position where when I launch my coaching practice, I go all in. No stops, no breaks, no confusion. That's not really how business works, but as little confusion as possible in that space. So, needless to say, I had my hands full. By the time I left South Sudan, I had a solid foundation for how I wanted to build my coaching practice with a few other certifications I had yet to build. I had won the world title in military exhibition drill for the second time, and I was getting ready to head home and get everything started off the ground. So I had two more certs that I had to get in June and in August of 2020, and I'd fully be ready to launch. And those are my certifications from the Certified Life Coach Institute. Mm. As soon as that happened, and I got the final cert, all my paperwork was ready, all of my logistics were ready, and I was ready to start coaching. So that journey in and of itself had people who came to me because they knew I was a coach. I had my own marketing techniques where people were coming to me, put myself on a coach listing platform. And the reason I share all this is not to say, I finally got a shop full of clients. This was the second part of learning who I would be as a life coach. Mm. Would I just be working with general clients? Well, if you asked me back then, probably. Mm. It wasn't until working with general clients and then switching my niche to identity coaching that I finally stopped in May of 2021 and said, okay, what is it that I'm really called to do in this space? And then it hit me like a ton of bricks. Work with leaders. The leadership experience and expertise that I have had over many years had people speak things into me that I didn't even see in myself from the time I was a teenager. It was obvious. Had to sit with the leadership piece. Mm. And that is who I am today. Sam, the leadership coach, and a few other things as well outside of the entrepreneurial space. But since we're talking about that, this is me. This is who I am.
Cool. So, okay, I feel like my mind filed a few questions. So I'm making mental notes. We're going to go through them one at a time. Thank you for being so vulnerable, because first I wanted to share an overlap that I had. Really interesting, actually, August 2018 through October 2018, right? Well, I was living in Airbnbs in California and totally understand that strive mentality. And I remember posting on social media, and it was actually after hiring my first coach and after I left a really, really abusive relationship. And that striving, like that frantic energy, you know, the reaction mode. I am so grateful that I experienced that, because I see now how important it is to get out of that. I also call that the consumer mode, you know. So I just want to point out the congruency there. That's just really amazing to me that you experience the same kind of thing from the coaching perspective. It may have led you there, right? The pushing, the hustling. Point number one. Okay, number two was, do you have a background, a family background, a military, or?
I do not. I didn't find out until years into, like, I think in my late 20s that my dad actually wanted to join the Air Force, but they wouldn't let him in that time period for whatever reason. But my background is actually, it started no more than junior ROTC in high school, 2005 to 2009. Then I went to Norwich University from 2009 to 2014. That's a senior military college in Vermont.
Okay, so this to me is amazing, because from my experience talking with most people, the military desire comes from that military family. You know, it's passed on. It's a heritage passed on, a mindset passed on. So what the heck got you interested in this route? I would love to know.
You want me to be 100% honest here?
Yes.
Because when I was 13 years old and trying to figure out what life was supposed to be like, I literally sucked at every sport that I tried. So,
Oh.
football wasn't my thing. Basketball wasn't my thing. Kickball, probably. I could kick the ball pretty good. But every other sport that involves more athletic young preteens and teenagers, yeah, that wasn't me. I was literally the second coming of Steve Urkel. But for whatever reason, when I was in seventh and eighth grade and I saw our junior ROTC from high school come and perform for our middle school, call a whole bunch of commands that I'd never heard before and start spinning rifles, I'm like, I'm gonna do that. May or may not have sounded like, I wanna do that.
What was your parents' response to you going into the military drill thing and then also coaching? Like, have you always had that support? What does that look like for you growing up and into the role you are now?
Good question. So anything that involved rifles when I was 13 or 14, mom was like, why would you get involved with something like that? Dad, in a sense, kind of shared the opinion of mom, but he was a little bit more chill with it. I think with my parents, the main concern was, is this going to get you seriously hurt? And it's understandable. When you see high schoolers with rifles, the first thing you probably think to yourself is, are they loaded? Can they shoot? Is it safe? So, no harm, no foul for their concern in that space. But I was like, I think this is something that I want to do. And then I had a dream one night that I was actually with our drill team at the National High School Drill Team Championships, which is basically the Super Bowl of JROTC drill in Daytona. I'm like, oh, I want this now. I don't know how I'm gonna get there, but short little Sam Gozo is gonna grow up, become a man, and be a part of that drill team.
I said thank you for clarifying those
Yeah, absolutely.
and clarity coach. So anyway, I would love to know, did you have a role model growing up that kind of like gave you the persona of what a leader was before you got into this line of work? Like, was there an ideal fleshed out for you initially?
I wouldn't say that there was one person that was fleshed out in that space. I can name plenty of people that were personal to my life that had attributes of leaders that leadership that I very much enjoyed, very much learned from. and then even people that I've spoken to. I could go on this entire podcast and name every single one and name all of their traits. But it's more of, number one, a conglomerate of things I've learned from other people and things that I've gotten to learn from experience, especially when I was in South Sudan as that missionary and that drill instructor role. Because if you want to see what kind of a leader you are, go ahead and put yourself in a place, or rather get put in a place, where English is not the first language, number one. Number two, everything that you think you know about teaching and learning, you're going to have to adjust it very fast because of the cultural gap that comes into it. Number three, if you want to know how patient you are as a person and as a leader, go ahead and step outside of the world that you have always known, professionally and personally. So with that, it's not to say that there's one person's like, oh, I want to be like him when I grow up. It's taking bits and pieces, internalizing what I loved and what I learned from it, just putting the rest aside, and maybe picking it up at a later time if it's necessary. Don't want to necessarily throw everything out away, with the exception of a few things, like, I don't know, like, don't kick a baby or something like that. But, you know, you never know when certain things are going to serve its purpose.
I love that. Don't throw the water, don't throw the baby away with the bathwater. That phrase has been coming to my mind a lot. To remind everyone, where I really relate with Sam is that I also kind of, I got more into leadership development. At first I was just consulting, like it was doing done for you work, you know, doing projects, the front end of business, developing workflows, but I didn't really have a say or have, and I didn't want to have a say in the development of CEOs or how they lead their businesses. Until very recently when I realized that I understand leadership now is normalized, and I would love to know your thoughts on this, but I've seen it become normalized that leaders are emotionally driven or money driven. I found that there's lacked a very specific structure for people to follow, no matter how good their hearts are, to really have a system based process where they can, like, step by step, like, grow into a leader that can lead a team and relate to their teammates and unify the team and really form relationships and form a culture based on love, connection, and empathy. What have you experienced with business owners or otherwise of people who have had a leadership approach that you see needed to be adjusted? What did that look like?
So in this space, what I've seen a lot of are more newer leaders or people who haven't exactly flexed into that role of leadership, having, despite having been in that role for a long time. The main thing is either there is, yeah, that lack of structure, because it's assumed that once you get a title, things are just going to fall into place, which that never happens in any capacity. But something that definitely humbled my approach even before I started saying, okay, I'm going to go into the space of leadership coaching, is that when we see that lack of structure, in a sense, the thing that we're not seeing sometimes are those that our leaders are answering to. Other board members, other shareholders. We don't know who they're trying to make happy. Other customers. The conversations that most team members and employees are blessed to never have to be involved in. So there is grace to be had in those spaces where there may not be a whole lot of clarity from the employee or the team members, even from my perspective. To which point I ask, what can be shared? What can be opened? Because the thing is, the thing that really drives confusion in an organization is lack of communication. Lack of clarity in that space. So you don't have to go on a dear diary with your team members in every turn in the corner, but there does need to be not just an open door policy, but a culture of openness so that everyone can get on the same sheet of music and understand why they're getting on the same sheet of music. It's not just following orders for following orders' sake. And will there be a time where you got to just jump and ask how high? Absolutely. But the more openness there is, the less jump. Why? Instead of how high. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And that's where the mission and branding comes in, the culture of the company, you know, so people understand what they're contributing to, you know, so that's like a whole other podcast, but absolutely. I would also like to say an observation. This is just from my own observations, but I would love to have your own perspective on this. What I notice when working with people of a certain age or generation, especially, I guess I'm talking about like the baby boomers, maybe like 60s and up, right? So people who are kind of, who might be stuck in their ways. And okay, I'll just be a little more personal. I had a really terrible experience with someone recently. And it was interesting because everything she was saying didn't, it sounded good and felt good for a little bit, but then realizing her actions didn't back up her words, right? Like she hates when people say, oh, it's just business, you know, and you walk all over people and you have poor ethics. But then I realized after being treated a certain way, when I voiced my needs and spoke up a certain way, because she talked this way, I thought she was creating safety for me to speak up and say, I spoke up and said, I don't like the way I'm being treated. I'm not being treated like an equal here. I can't continue working with you. She freaked out, tore up the contract, like made it a big deal. And I have noticed that whenever I see that, I'm like, oh, that seems to be a trait of the older generations, where maybe it was more not, it was less emphasized to be empathetic and compassionate and have interpersonal relationships. Is that a stereotype? And if so, I mean, is it accurate? What can we take away? Because I know there are people listening to this who might, whether they're working for someone who's like that or if it's their parents, what would you observe, first of all, about the older generation? And what advice would you have for someone like me who may have a gap in understanding?
Okay. So I'm going to go ahead and answer the first question as far as like what I've observed with the older generation. To start, I'm very selective on who I would work with. And I, to this point in time, have only worked with one person, not in a leadership space, that was over the age of 65. And it's just circumstances had it be. I usually work with people in their late 20s to their late 30s. Okay. A few outliers in their 40s, but mostly in that middle age range on that space. On a general stance, putting the coaching side aside, the coaching hat aside, absolutely. Definitely seen people in the older generation stuck in their ways, but I wouldn't say it's because they're stuck in their ways and that's just how baby boomers are. I would go even deeper, and the coach in me is very inclined to always look into anytime there's an outburst, anytime there is resistance to change, is it because they're older? Or is it because in whatever space they were in, caretakers, education, they didn't learn about the three elements of the human psyche, the id, the ego, and the superego. The id, specifically what we're talking about, the shadow of them that is concerned with protecting their ego, with protecting their knowledge, lest they look stupid. Every outburst that you see, I don't care how old or how young you are, is the result of someone's shadow wanting to protect the tender side of them, that vulnerable side that they're either disavowing on their own or have had disavowed throughout most of their lives. So I don't think this is something that's unique to any older generation. I've seen people in their 20s with that too. It just comes down to how educated are they in that space. Now, remind me what the second half of your question was.
Yes, if someone found themselves in a particular situation where I did, maybe it's standing up to a boss or just trying to negotiate with someone who you find out isn't negotiable until it's too late. What would you advise for someone in that situation?
As hard as it might be, don't take the resistance or the outburst personally. That's more of a reflection on where they are and what they're working through than it ever will be about you. Now, I say that not knowing the individual situations of every person that is in your position, but from what I've seen with outbursts, with what I've seen with anger, heck, with what I've experienced with my own outbursts. There's something that they're shielding. There's something that they're trying to protect. Usually their pride. Again, that tender side that once upon a time got scorned or got disavowed. And they never want to do that again. They never want to go through that again. So if you're going to step into that situation, definitely step into it knowing that you are who you are. You're doing what it is that you're doing. Be as grounded and be as confident in your approach without being overbearing, of course, as you possibly can be in that moment, and release attachment to the outcome. Another very hard thing to do. Because once we get so attached on how a conversation is going to look or should look, if all things go well, we don't give ourselves or even the situation the grace to be something totally different if we simply just allow it to be. Somebody gets an outburst, okay. That's how it is. The conversation goes right when I think it should go left. Okay. Let's figure it out from there.
Yeah.
Remain unattached.
I love that. By the way, so all your terms like unattached, let things be. I am obsessed with the Tao Te Ching, and it's, listeners, you'll hear me talk more about that. One of these podcasts, one of these days, but are you familiar with the Tao Te Ching?
I'm just a life coach.
Well, it's an ancient philosophy book, if you will, but it's all about governance and leadership. It's directed towards businessmen, world leaders, and also just anyone individually. And so just the language you're using, you know, it really resonates with me. But so I guess I just want to invite you to look into that more. I'll send you a link to the YouTube version I like of it. There's an audiobook. But Sam, I think we're at the end of the podcast, so I've got to ask a final question and send you on your way. So I would like to know, a final question I have is, okay, what's in store for you, and what can others expect to see more of from you in the future?
Are we talking personally, professionally, both?
Both.
All right, cool. Let's start with personal, because I'm the most excited about this. As of the time that this is being shot, I am 80 days away from getting married. So I am super excited about that. And y'all probably can't tell by the audio, but I'd be blushing if I could right now. But that's neither here nor there.
Is that your fiance in the back?
Yes, it is.
Awesome. I love it. Oh, so cool.
Yep.
What's her name?
So her name's Kristen.
Kristen. Congratulations, Sam and Kristen. That's great.
Thank you. Thank you. That's going to be on the podcast, isn't it?
Yes.
She's nodding her head. Okay. Look at you. All right. Moving forward here. You know, I would have answered this question so much different maybe about 4 years ago. But the thing is, I could talk about all the things that I've got planned next, but I'm more interested in what's here right now. Yeah, in less than 3 months, I'll be married. I'll still be working the same job that I have with Certified Life Coach Institute, and Integrative Clarity Coaching is going to go where it's going to go. I fully plan on having that grow even more than it is now, but I'm not so attached to having it look one way that I can give a clear answer and say, hey, next year, look out. Integrative Clarity Coaching is going to be a six-figure business and all that, right? I'm content with the building phase of what's here. So what's next for Sam? I can give you an answer, but what's now? What's now is I'm here, I'm doing this podcast, I'm happier than I've been in years. I have a relationship with the Lord. It's just so amazing.
So, listeners, I just want everyone to take note of those final words, like being now, being here in the now is so important, to be grounded in the present, because that's like all we have anyway, you know? So that's a perfect way to leave off this podcast. Thank you, Sam. So, and
Thank you.
the final question is, if people want to get in touch, reach out to you, where is the best place for them to do that?
Got it. So you can go on www.integrativeclaritycoaching.com, or you can find me on Instagram. That's where I'm the most active with some of the most ridiculous reels I think I've ever made, at Integrative Clarity Coaching. Very simple. And you can reach out to me via DM. You can go through my website and use the contact form. I'm pretty accessible. If you find me on Facebook, so be it. Say hi. Tell me where you found me. Let's have a conversation. I'm open for that.
Awesome. Okay, you guys. And so if you missed that website or you're driving and can't jot it down, I'm going to put the link in the description so you can just go ahead and click to contact Sam that way. All right. Well, thank you so much for being here, Sam. This is great. And I look forward to continue being in touch and happy wedding.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye-bye.